Today we speak again of spiritual risks, of everyday courage and commonplace daring, of acts of the Spirit that we are called to face with honesty and with compassion. Last month, the risk we dared to speak about was faith. Faith in life, faith in one another, faith in a world whose abundant blessings are here, even and especially for us, if only we can keep daring to believe they exist. Today, I invite us to consider a word that probably a lot of us haven't thought about in a very long time. Thought about this word since those days you might have known in a busy Catholic school or a quiet sanctuary somewhere when words ran through your head that you might have known by heart. The words I knew, the ancient prayer I was taught, began something like, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy. And if you were anything like me, you might have uttered just such a prayer, wondering if some embracing compassion beyond plain old forgiveness might just land upon your weary shoulders somewhere up there. Mercy on me. What a powerful request that is to make of a universe so infinitely capable of both mercilessness and compassion. But it felt like an honest request then. And in moments that I dare not deny, it feels like an honest need now. Mercy. In most of its permutations in our culture, mercy is either an uttered prayer or a cry for pain to end. It's either a supplication or an act of begging. But only rarely is it an aspect of our spiritual lives that we give much consideration to. And yet spiritual risk, this whole endeavor that we're talking about this fall, is about nothing if not truth. And the truth is that whether or not we posit a supernatural God who could ever do anything as obvious as have mercy upon us, we are at the mercy of mighty forces. And the equal and opposite truth, one which is perhaps even more difficult to admit, is that in moments that are more frequent than we want to acknowledge, we hold others in the sway of our own mercy, be it given or withheld. We are both the most powerful creatures our imaginations can comprehend and the most abundantly powerless. We are the mighty ones who might have the power to dispense mercy, and we are the frightened ones who fall to our knees, wondering who or what might have the power to put us back together again. And living within this paradox, living in a way that we are both of these creatures, sometimes both at once, lies at the heart of the spiritual journey. It lies at the heart of honesty. And honesty itself is a risk. According to my online dictionary of choice, mercy can be defined as compassion or forbearance shown to one subject to one's power. It could also be defined as lenient or compassionate treatment. It implies compassion that forbears punishment even when justice demands it. And the common construction that we all know, at the mercy of, is equivalent to saying that one is wholly in the power of another. It's a lot of definitions, most of them a little bit scary. And I didn't even get into the synonyms. Those definitions range from simple compassion or forbearance to actually withholding punishment for wrongdoing. That's a wide spectrum. But I find that there is one thing all of those definitions and all of the ideas of mercy have in common, and that is the idea that mercy unquestionably has something to do with power, with who has it, with who doesn't have it, and with how it is wielded in a given situation. Power can be unjustly held over the heads of those in need, in which case it is oppression. Power can be brandished like a weapon, in which case it is tyranny. Or power can be wielded with compassion and gentleness and forbearance, in which case it is mercy. Thus, to offer mercy is to use the power we all have to create in this violent world a moment of kindness for another person, whether or not it is or could ever have been earned. To receive mercy is to receive from this broken world, from the people in it, or from God, a gift we could not have gotten for ourselves. Why then, if it is simply using your power to bring about kindness and compassion, which seems pretty doable most of the time, why would mercy be a spiritual risk? It is a risk because we have such great need of it so often, and because we are also so often called to wield it well. It is a risk because each of us is its recipient and its source, and some days it would be easy to imagine we were wholly one or wholly the other. It is a risk because to be in relationship to this world and to the people in it, we must be vulnerable enough and responsible enough to be both the one in need of mercy and the one called to dispense it. If we are not both vulnerable and responsible, we have run away from the challenge of being fully human. We know, after all, what it feels like to try to be in control of our lives, only to find out that the web we ourselves have woven, a web we thought would hold us up forever, turns out to be filament thin and more fragile than we ever knew. We know what it is to imagine that we are entirely the masters of our own destiny, only to find ourselves compelled to see the wonder and the mystery of our own smallness. From our first breath, from our first hints of human socialization, we are engaged in a mighty struggle to control everything around us. We cry because we're hungry, and if we're lucky, we learn that that brings food. And so it begins, the steady pull of ours at the strings of creation. Exert power in one direction, and there is sustenance. Push in another, and people conform to your will. Press at another point, and a river might alter its course. And pretty soon, the whole environment seems to be at one human being's beck and call. Now, for many of us, particularly those who hail from the middle or upper middle class of what is still among the richest nations in the world, it comes pretty naturally to think we control everything. We are powerful people. We are lucky people, and the whole world tends to listen to us. And so we learn to define ourselves by the effect we have on the world around us, and by extension, we determine that a strong and worthy human being can control just about anything. And yet, every time we get ourselves all worked up about our individual human grandiosity, every time we determine that the measure of our worth is our ability to control the world around us, life happens. And even for upper middle class Americans, there is no promise that life will happen the way we want it to. Something has to hold us when our delusions of grandeur break down. Something has to catch us when we can't control the workings of the strings, and that something is the source of mercy, the power that holds us, and often that something is either one another, or it is a mystery so vast we can't comprehend it. And yet the idea so often repeated on one's knees that only God can have mercy implies that only God has power, and we know that is not the case. Because we are both the source and the recipient of great mercy, we know that the spiritual risk we are called to is infinitely harder than just supplication to God or anybody else to have mercy on us. Because among the great spiritual risks brought to light by acts of mercy is included the risk of owning up to the potential of our great power. Living into the paradox of our ability to change the world, even as we acknowledge our inability to control everything in it. Certainly we are at the mercy of forces greater, or at least different, than ourselves. We experience our relative smallness all the time. But there is also a temptation to run away as fast as we can from our own power. There is a temptation to pretend we cannot change the world. A temptation to imagine ourselves weaker than we are, to think that we are powerless and thus incapable and thus off the hook. In so doing, we rob ourselves of the many opportunities we may have to show mercy in our lives, to use our power to make ourselves instruments of compassion. In our reading today, we encountered a woman bound for a place she'd never been before. And the man, ostensibly in a position of some authority over in relation to her, who used his knowledge and his basic human decency to make a frightening occasion a time of great mercy. Hungry and tired, staring at an unknown fruit, the woman didn't know what to do. But he did. That sailor ignored her. He could have turned his task to any number of people equally in need. His power in that moment was conferred through knowledge, and he could have chosen not to share it. But the poem tells us that on a ship called Mercy, a sailor gave a hungry woman an orange and taught her the word and wiped her chin and gave her the knowledge that he once held for himself. Running away from our own power, denying it or failing to use it, is just as tragic a spiritual defeat as assuming we have control of everything around us. In truth, we ourselves wield mighty forces here in our hands. To fail to use them out of shame or fear or distraction is to forget our great capacity for mercy and to buy into the old myth that only God can have mercy upon us. In truth, our hands may be the only hands God has ever had, and our mercy may be the only variety available in a given moment, so very much in need of compassion. We are indeed so powerful that the simple act of letting goodness and mercy pass through us, as our anthem this morning said, just that simple act is the means by which lives can be saved, wars can be ended, and hate can be brought to its knees. We must believe it. We must act on it, even in the presence of all we cannot do. A great big, huge part of being a spiritual human being is coming to know our power and our powerlessness, coming to see where we stand in the great dance of mercy. We must simply allow ourselves to be in the power of others even as we wield the power we have with gentleness. Our task is to thrive on that complexity instead of fight it. Our challenge is to live to the fullest within that paradox, and as luck would have it, life just keeps throwing us more and more opportunities to stand in the middle of a paradox every time we turn around. Now, I have purposely, the last several months, not let the current circumstances of my own life, namely the fact that I am homing in on the last couple months of pregnancy with my first child, I have purposely not let that sneak into my sermons just yet, and that is because I don't want to be one of those preachers who endlessly tells you about their own life rather than reflecting on things that are relevant to you. And I do not want to be one of those preachers, and you know they are out there, who endlessly talk about their children in sermons when said children are still too young to defend themselves. There are generations of pulpit-wielding parents who make semi-witty remarks about every burp and gurgle and trip to the potty, and I don't want to be among them, but I will break my rule today. Because when I think about power, about being at the mercy of mighty forces and also being mighty in one's own right, I cannot but think of my steady progress toward parenthood. Right now, this minute, with this tiny growing creature hitched up to my own bloodstream, there are all sorts of things I can control. And there are also a nearly infinite number of them that I cannot. I can't remember ever feeling so powerful and so powerless at the same time. Every bite I take impacts her, and every choice I make subtly or dramatically changes her life. Yet each time I sit in the doctor's office and think of the many things I cannot fix, I remember what it is to be powerless. I can eat protein to make her strong. I can skip some meetings so that she and I might get enough sleep. I can even lobby and vote and speak out so that she and her contemporaries might not be saddled with a country with no social security and a crippling national debt. But I cannot make sure that all her little organs form right. I cannot make sure that she stays put as long as she's supposed to. I cannot make sure that nobody ever hurts her and she never fails. And I cannot offer her any guarantees that she will be happy and proud of herself when she is a young woman. All I can do is what all of you can do, that which is within my power. All the mercy I can show is that small amount which is granted to me, and as for the rest, I am eternally at the mercy not only of God in the universe, but of this little child who already wields more power than seems rational for 2.5 pounds of Percy. And I am in the mercy of all of the forces outside my control that already hold her so closely, just as they hold your children, just as they hold your beloved. I am mighty as I have never been mighty before, and I am powerless as I have never been powerless before. And friend, maybe that's what love is. To know how much what you do matters to another person or a whole world of persons, and at the same time to know how much you cannot control. To be at the mercy of all things, and yet wielding so much potential for love and mercy in your own right, maybe that's what love is. And it's not only for parents or parents-to-be who stand in the face of such mighty and terrifying forces. It is for all of us who dare, even in the presence of our smallness and our weakness, to love that much anyway. If we are to be fully human, if we are to love this world or a person or persons in it, if we are to dare to be everything that our human nature calls us to be, we must acknowledge our ever-changing capacity to give and receive mercy. We must fall to our knees, either literally or metaphorically, from time to time, knowing that we need a power beyond or different from ourselves. And we must rise from our knees, literally or metaphorically, ready to be that power for others. So may it be, and amen.